Welcome to Skip the Queue, a podcast for people working in or working with visitor attractions. I'm your host, Kelly Molson.
In this new monthly slot, Rubber Cheese CEO Paul Marden joins me to discuss different digital-related topics. In this episode, we're answering your questions from the 2023 Visitor Attraction website report, asking what more you'd like to see in this year's survey, and sharing more on how you can get involved next time.
If you like what you hear, you can subscribe on all the usual channels by searching Skip the Queue.
Hello!
Well, hello.
This is nice. So the two of us haven't been together for a podcast episode for a while.
Oh, it does feel like, well, Happy New Year to start with.
Happy, it's way too late for that, malarkey. We've just been busy, haven't we? We've got lots of exciting projects that are coming to... Well, I didn't like to say the end, but they're coming to point of launch.
The launch, yeah, the exciting bit.
The very exciting bit. So we've all been pulled here, there and everywhere. So I've had lovely guests to speak to and you've had a little bit of a break from this. But we're back. And we're going to start, like we always do with these ones, with what attraction have you visited most recently and what did you love about it?
Oh, I have been to Mary Rose Museum. And I went with a bunch of 9 and 10 year olds. We basically went down there for the Kids in Museums takeover day. It's one of the kind of showpiece Kids in Museums events that they run every year, all around putting the ownership of the museum into the hands of kids. I managed to wangle my way to Mary Rose, which is relatively close to me. And I took my daughter's class, who I run a coding club for. So interestingly, the theme around our coding club this year is all around the arts and how you put art into STEM and make it STEAM.
This is like an amazingly, like, I can't believe how well that's worked out. Like, what a niche.
It gets better. The very first session of our club was all about what is the job of a museum curator. We took that theme and we went and took over the Mary Rose and became curators for a day. So the kids got to go around the museum and have fun and see all the cool stuff that's going on there. They did the 3D dive, the Mary Rose experience, and it was amazing watching a bunch of 9 and 10 year olds reaching out and popping these bubbles that were on the 3D screen in front of them. And then they went off and they designed their own interactive display around whatever was the thing that excited them about the museum. So there was lots of dog themed ones, because there's a dog that is the kind of subject and a lot of the kids stuff focused around Mary Rose. But there was all different sorts of interactive displays, augmented reality within the glass lift that looks onto the Mary Rose, and how you could gamify it. The kids just had a whale of a time. And I just strolled around the museum and watched them having fun. So that wasn't a tough day at all.
I'm actually really jealous as well, because we were due to go and then you got the opportunity to go because of that thing happening, and I still haven't been.
I know. And it's an amazing place. We had so much fun. They welcomed us. We had all the education department looking after us and making us feel special. It was just such a brilliant day, apart from trying to park a minibus with 15 kids somewhere near the Mary Rose, which scared me witless.
Oh, you actually drove the bus?
I did not drive the bus. No, I was the navigator. I had to find the parking spot.
It's a level of responsive. Like, you were bus driver dad as well that day.
There's a character in Peppa Pig, isn't there? I can't remember who she is, but she works in the supermarket. She drives the minibus.
Miss Rabbit is the hardest working rabbit you'll ever meet in your whole life.
Exactly.
I'm actually going to put her on par with Mrs. Rabbit, who has got hundreds of kids, who doesn't work, but she has to look after those. So she is probably the hardest working rabbit that you'll ever find. But there you go. Digress into Peppa Pig. You can see where my world is right now, can't you? Yeah. That just gave you an insight into where I'm spending my time.
So tell me about, where have you been recently?
I have been recently to the Museum of the Broads. Now, I've ever really spoken about this on the podcast that much, but I am a trustee of the Museum of the Broads, and it is a lovely museum. It does not get as much love and attention as it should, so I felt that today was a good opportunity to highlight it. It's wonderful. It's on the Broads, obviously. It's in Stanham, and it is such incredible value for money because you can buy a ticket to the museum and a boat trip, and the boat trips
Oh, wow.
are phenomenal. So
Yeah.
they last year, these were really popular. So they introduced some afternoon evening boat trips where you could go and spot kingfishers because that stretch of the Broads is
Wow.
absolutely like prime kingfisher viewing area. I have only ever seen one kingfisher out in real life, and it's only and they're so quick, like it was a flash of blue,
Yeah.
and I didn't have my glasses on either, so literally wasn't going to see anything in great detail. So they are there. I mean, that is incredible. On one of the trips last year, on the boat trip, they saw 10 kingfishers. It might have been the same kingfisher, just like who knows. I'm going to say 10. I'm going to take the 10. But the museum itself is wonderful. I mean, it is just, it's a true. Some of the artifacts they have there are just are really fun and really engaging. And obviously they've got lots of information about the boats and the Broads themselves and what the Broads were traditionally used for and how they've, how they've developed over the years. It's a lovely, lovely little museum. It's volunteer led. They have, I think, two or three members of paid team there. So, so much work goes into the management and the development of those museums when it's volunteer led as well. So it's lovely. It is really
So
lovely.
we both started doing trusteeship type stuff at the same time. So I started at Kids in Museums because I wanted to see a broad view of things. You started at Museum of the Broads because you wanted to see the inside running of the museum itself. What has the experience been like for you?
It's so different. It's such a different environment to what I'm used to. So, I mean, it won't surprise you to know that museums are not quite as dynamic as an agency, or they're just not as fast-paced as an agency. So I think the speed at which some things happen is, I find it a bit of a challenge, if I'm honest, because we're used to kind of going, should we try this? Okay, let's talk it. Okay, great. Let's let someone run with it. And it's sort of just, I don't know, there's a speed at which stuff happens in an agency that it's uncomparable to any other organization. So it's nice in some ways that kind of take a bit of time to kind of think things through. I've really enjoyed understanding about all of the different facets that are required within an agency, within a museum, sorry, and the things that you have to understand about. I mean, even when we had an office, there's a level of HR and a level of safety management that you have to do, but it's a whole nother level when it's a museum and you've got members of the public coming along. So that's been really
Yeah.
interesting to understand and learn about. I've really enjoyed kind of looking at how they're developing certain areas of the museum as well. So when there's a new exhibition that's on, so last year the Pippa Miller exhibition launched. Pippa Miller was a really famous artist that was connected to the Broads, and the museum was entrusted with some of her artwork when she passed, and it's in, it, it's the only place you can come and see it. It is
Oh,
it's a
wow.
one it's a wonderful exhibition. So understanding about how those exhibitions are developed and put on, and watching those happen as well. And there's another one this year that will happen, which is an exhibition on peat, which I know that probably doesn't sound that interesting, but it really
One,
is.
my mate Pete.
No, not your mate peat. No, actual peat, soil peat.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been really nice to see and kind of understand how those things progress and are developed and the ideas that go into them. It's fascinating.
Cannot imagine the effort that goes into curating a
It's
whole
fast.
exhibition like that.
It's fast. And I will give a huge shout out to Nicola, the curator at the Museum of the Broads, because she works tirelessly there to bring these stories to life.
Yeah.
That's essentially what they do. They bring the stories of the Broads to life. It what I would This is a little plea from me, actually, a little shout out to everyone that's listening. If everybody listening to this podcast, I mean, we get hundreds of people listen to these episodes. If everyone went and bought a ticket from the Museum of the Broads that's listening to this episode today, it would make such a massive difference to that little museum. So if you are thinking about booking a little staycation this year, head to Norfolk, get a ticket to the Museum of the Broads, go and check out the Broads themselves. It is just a wonderful, experience to go and see that museum and take a boat trip down the Broads.
There's a very nice place nearby to stay as well, isn't
well,
there?
I mean, a certain podcast host does have a lovely little place in Norfolk that you could rent out, which is literally 25 minutes from this museum as well. So just heads up,
coincidental.
If you want to give me a shout, I can put you in the direction of 28 Millgate, or you could just search that on Google. No, honestly, genuinely, if you are thinking about having a staycation and you're heading that way, it is put it top of your list, because it's a lovely little afternoon out. Thank you. Thanks for listening to my podcast.
So what are we actually talking about today, then?
In this episode, we are going to be answering some of the questions that we've received from the 2023 Visitor Attraction website report. So as you can imagine, we launch the report. We do the survey, all you lovely people fill in our survey for us, and we launch the report, which gives you an analysis of what that survey data has meant. And it's a huge undertaking. Like, it really is a huge undertaking. And I don't say that lightly. It's massive. It takes over our whole lives. And there is so much data in the report that we sent out, but there's always questions. There's always more. And there's always more that we can do as well. And I think it just is an awful lot of work, right? So what happens is we launch it, it goes out, people digest it, and then they send us emails and they say, this is really great, thank you for this bit. Is there any insight into this thing? And there's quite a lot of those emails that come in, and they're, you know, most of them we probably can answer. It just, again, takes a bit of work to go back and look at the data and crunch the data and see if there is any answers to those questions. So we have had some of these questions in, and we thought, well, let's do it as a podcast, and then everybody can hear the answers to these questions, because it might be something that other people are thinking about as well. So we're going to talk through some of the ones that have been sent in, and then we are going to give you a bit of a heads up about what's happening with this year's report and survey, and talk a little bit about that. Sound good?
Does sound good. I need to get my geek hat on, my numbers geek hat.
It's time for Paul to nerd out. I will be asking the questions, Paul will be nerding out on the answers. Right. Okay. One of the questions we had in was, how many respondents were return respondents from 2022 to 2023?
Yeah, this was a question that somebody else did in relation to. They saw some changes. There was, I think it was in terms of ticketing systems that were being used, and they wanted to know, oh, if there's been a change in the ticketing systems that we used, could that be because we've got a different group of people, or is it the same people changing systems? So, yeah, I dug into that. It was actually relatively hard to figure this out, because what people type in as the name of their attraction is not always exactly the same. It's sometimes different people. Sometimes they'll write the same name in a slightly different way. So actually comparing apples with apples turned out to be quite challenging. And I had to change some of the data to normalize it between the two groups. I could see they were the same attraction, although their names were subtly different. And what I worked out was two different views of the same thing. But essentially, in the 2023 data set, 20% of the respondents were return respondents from the previous year. But of course, the 2023 data set was much bigger than the 2022 data set. So if you look at it from the other direction, how many people that filled in a survey in 22 filled in a survey in 23? It's 50% of the 2022 respondents replied in 2023.
Oh,
so we had a good return rate. Yeah, for sure. But there was 50% of people didn't reply. So that made me think, there's a job of work to do this year.
Where did you all go, 50% of you, cheeky little monkeys?
And they vary. Some of them are smaller institutions. Some of them are much bigger institutions. You know, there's a reasonable amount of movement of people in the sector, isn't there? So you can easily imagine. Actually, there was an interesting one there, isn't it? What if I were to match the names of the respondents? Did we actually get a reasonable number of returners, but they were in a different job with a different institution?
Yeah, that's really a good point, actually, because I know that they've moved on and gone to different places.
Yeah.
So yeah, and actually some moved out of the sector and moved into completely different roles altogether. So
yeah. So there is a decent cohort of people that returned and responded in 23, but the 23 data set was much bigger. So when you do see swings between 22 and 23, some of that is just a sample size thing. It's we you with the best will in the world, we talk to lots of people and lots of people respond with data to us, but we have not captured the whole entire set of all attractions in the UK. And so it depends, we will get sampling errors out. Yeah. If 1 year we sample a different group of people than we did the previous year, the comparisons can be a little bit harder. If we could just get more people responding and we had more data, then you'll get that the role of chance and the role of sampling errors will have less impact on the data, and you'll be able to compare more year on year outcomes.
Okay. Well, there's your call out to get involved this year. We'll let you know how.
There's going to be lots of those way through.
Okay, second question. Can we break down the responses in the other type category? This is an interesting one, isn't it? Because we detailed out as many different visitor attraction types as we possibly could think of or find on internet, or, you know, and gave everybody the opportunity to be able to select what they specifically were. But we still had a huge amount of people put other. What's the reasoning behind that?
Oh, can I give you facts and then tell you what I think the reasoning is?
Do that.
Yeah. So there's some things that I know. Okay. 37% of all respondents mark themselves as other. It skews when you drill into that 37%. It's a big group of people. Mm. It was like the second or third largest group of people in the report itself. They tended to be attractions that had lower visitor numbers. Yeah, so they were under 100,000 visitor numbers in that other group. So it was about 45% of people were under 100, about 37% were between 100 and a million visitors. Those are the things we know. Then I started having a play with the data. So what if I were to group those people that were in other, because they had the opportunity to type some stuff in for free text box, and could I make a grouping out of that? One thing that I did notice, and this is observation as opposed to fact, okay? So I could see many of the places that chose other because we didn't allow them to choose multiple types, and they were an attraction that had multiple things. So one of them was one of our clients, and they have a historic house. They have a guest house. They have a beach. They have outdoors activities. They've got...
So how do you categorize yourself based on all of those? Actually, with that client, I probably would have said historic house. That's what I would have put my hat on for that one. But
then I met somebody yesterday, right? They're not too dissimilar. Yeah, it primarily a historic house, but it's a historic house that has a hotel, spa, golf on the site. And if you ask them, it would totally depend on who you spoke to as to what they primarily were. There were people that ran the historic house who would have you believe that they were primarily a historic house. But there were other people that would say, well, actually, the revenue is generated elsewhere in the organization. And primarily, we are a hotel and golf destination.
Yeah.
And alongside, we have a historic house. So I think there was a nuance in the way that we asked the question, please choose what type of attraction you are. And the only option for the people that had lots of these things was to say other. And actually, I think going forwards, we probably need to say, what are you primarily, and do you have other things, and give people the option to choose multiples.
Yeah, I was going to say, because even if you put multi, it causes the same challenge, doesn't it, without being able to.
But when I had a play around with that group, and I tried to assign them to things, partly based on what they replied on their questionnaires and partly by looking at their websites and having a guess, a lot of them had some element of... outdoor activity. A lot of them had food and drink. There was a large group that weren't multi-activity. I don't know what a better way to describe those historic houses with other things going on. But there was a decent size of people or decent size number of attractions that were TV themed, and they were primarily a behind the scenes tour or something themed around a telly program. Yeah, and we didn't have that. There was nothing like that in any of our categorizations. So again, it just comes down to, you know, refining the questionnaire every year to try to improve what we've got. Yep. Give people the option to choose multiples and include some other groups.
Yeah.
But avoid getting to a point when you look at all the categories we gave, because you mentioned we gave lots of categories. There was a very long tail. You know, there was a large number of the actual categories where it had one or two attractions within that grouping. And then it's like, is that a meaningful way of slicing and dicing the data? So we have to be really careful not to throw too many categories at it, but at the same time, give people some choices.
Yeah, you also have to feel that the people have to feel that they are included within this as well. So, you know, if those one or two people came along and they couldn't choose what they were, would they feel excluded from it in
And
some
would
way?
they,
So,
yeah, would they drop out because they are, this clearly isn't for me.
Exactly. So I'm all for having more choice in that. It's like, it's a tick box. That's fine. There's other stuff that we can take out. Don't worry.
And that's because you're not looking at the data. You add more numbers.
I'm all for cutting stuff out if it makes life easier for people, who and more people will be able to fill it in and that. But I think that one particular thing is not one that we need to cut back on.
No, I agree with you. Completely agree.
Were all attractions who responded to the survey paid for, or how do those e-commerce results break down between those that have an entry fee and those that are free? This was a good question.
Yeah, it really was. In many of the questions that we've got, some people chose not to answer us. Yeah. So there, within this group, there's a group of people in the whole set of data that chose not to answer this, either because they didn't know or they felt they didn't want to answer the question. But if we take everybody that reported an entry fee, 15% of those people were free of charge. Yeah, mm-hmm. So they ticked the box that said they had no entry fee. That's already a fairly small group amongst the whole data set. So we're asking questions here that zero in on a smaller and smaller group. This sounds like I'm giving excuses before I give you my homework. Yeah, but as the groups get smaller, then the role of chance and sample error means that the data becomes less and less reliable. And I've got to be honest, within that 15%, there was a large number of people that didn't tell us a conversion rate. So you're down into a very small number of people now. 85% of the free to enter attractions didn't tell us what their conversion rate was, or said they didn't know or couldn't measure it.
So that's interesting in itself, because this is some of the things that we've been talking about in terms of the conversion rate and how we measure that effectively, because some of those free museums obviously will have probably smaller teams, less budget, less ability, maybe, you know, just less understanding of what we're asking in the first place. My assumption is that they will use off-the-shelf ticketing platforms that they might not be able to get the conversion rate from. So you've got that limitation in the data that they can actually then supply us, because they genuinely just don't have it. They don't know it.
Or because they're free, they don't think about a concept of conversion. But how, you know, in that instance, how much does it matter, the number of people that come to your website and then the number of people that actually buy? You know, if there is no ticketing, if you're free to enter and you don't even need a ticket to pre-book to enter, does it even matter? And I would argue absolutely, it definitely does, because instinctively, I would believe that there is definitely a relationship between the number of people that visit your website and the number of people that visit your attraction. Mm-hmm. And if you can improve the ratio between those two, you'll get more footfalls through the attraction. And even if you're free to enter, you know, a considerable portion of the money that you make out of the attraction is going to be from donations from people walking through the door. It will be food and beverage sales. It will be gift shops. It will be memberships that they join to get other things. All of those things need bums on seats, don't they? If you don't get bums on seats, you don't generate that revenue. But it can be hard, I think, to join the dots between that big number of people that visit your website, hopefully, and the number of people that are actually walking through the door, and creating a correlation between creating a relationship between the two.
It's when there's no purchase made from that thing to that thing, there's nothing, there's almost nothing to tie them together.
Yeah, but that, it makes it harder to think about, Which, when you're a small attraction, in those sorts of circumstances, if it's harder to think about, then it's not going to be a priority for you. But I would argue it would be a super important thing to do, because you tweak those. Well, we're all about tweaking the dials, aren't we? We're all about trying to increase
marginal
the number of
gains.
People.
Yep.
Oh, exactly.
Marginal gains.
And in that instance, it can be hard to see the point, but I definitely believe there really is a point to it. If I go on, one more thing I would say, and this is where the data, I don't think the data is reliable, but we're into this small group of people that we had 15% of people say that they were free. And in that group, we had a small number of people tell us what their conversion rate was. And it varied. There were some attractions that had a 1% conversion rate. There were some attractions that chose the 5% conversion rate, which was the higher end of the bracket, which was the average over the whole group. I bet you there's more data that would help us to understand what the difference between the 1% and the 5% was. Is it chance, or is there something materially different between those two types of institution? I don't know, but it's there's a debate there. And is it valuable for us to investigate that? There's only so much time to be able to put to these things.
Well, I think this is why it's important. Well, this is why we value people asking the questions about the report. This is why we encourage people to give us feedback and to you know, send us these questions in, because it all adds to the conversation, and it all helps us make this better and better every year, because we can understand what, you know, you send us a question and that gives us an understanding of what's really important for you right now. So we can start to incorporate some of the ways to get the answer to that question into the survey and the report for this year.
Yeah, completely.
So send us more questions. as a midway to this podcast, definitely send us some more questions. You can send them to me, kelly@rubbercheese.com, or you can send them to paulm@rubbercheese.com. But whatever you do, just send them in. And then we can, again, start to look at how we incorporate some of those questions into this year's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, next question. It's around ticketing platforms. One question came in, and they noted the apparent percentage drop in use of Access Gamma in the past year. So what we saw was DigiTickets and Merak both seemed to kind of hold their share, and they're UK-based, with over 70% of the 188 respondents UK-based and about a quarter of European. We found it a little odd that there was such a drop here in such a short space of time, and wondered if you had any further insight. Interesting one, isn't it? Because we all noted that Access had dropped off a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to caveat this again. I can go into more depth and understand the differences between the two, but I would caveat it that if we had more responses, we could be more confident in the reliability of the difference across years. But we've gone from a large, but you know, a sample in 22, a bigger sample in 23. The 23 sample included some of the 22 people. But really, I think what the question was getting at is how many of those people actually switched ticketing platforms between that group. And I think that is unlikely to be the reason why we saw these changes. Yeah, of course people change ticketing platform, but it's the beating heart of the business. They don't change it on a whim, and they don't change them dramatically very quickly. Yeah, so I've got no, by the way, there's no evidence to this in that respect. Like, there could be changes, but my instinct is it's unlikely to be a wild change on the basis of the number of people, because it's just not that easy to
do. And we speak to agencies, we know our own clients have been through these processes, and we know how long they take, and we know how embedded those systems are within an organization, and how difficult it actually is to switch from one to another, and the time frame that it takes. So I would agree with you.
On the basis of that, I think the differences are more easily explained by we've got more different people included, and we're seeing more of what the sector buys. Now, whether when we get into 24, whether we see another swing again, well, that's entirely plausible, because the sample sizes, you know, they're not big enough to be statistically valid. They give an indication, but they're not, you know, they will suffer from chance in some areas. And it could just be the group of people that we've got. We know within the year it demonstrates the usage of the ticketing platforms within the group of people that responded within that year. but unlikely to be comparable across the years. Only 20% of this year's data were responses that had been given in 22 as well. So we've only got a small group. Within that group, the data has changed dramatically in that year, and mainly with people telling us they chose an other not listed system. Yeah, so it was not one of the big ones that we were familiar with. And no one reported anything in that group last year. So this is where, I mean, you know, as well as I do, we get people asking us for copies of their data that they've submitted because, you know, there's a big period of time in between when they submit stuff and the report being published. And then they want to see what they did, what they gave to us, yeah. Don't they? So people remembering what they wrote last year and putting it in again this year, it's no wonder we see differences between the 2 year groups. Apart from other not listed, which was by far like a country mile, the largest number of responses, the biggest absolute change in the number of responses within the repeating group was DigiTickets. DigiTickets had more people within that returning group saying that they were using their ticketing platform.
Mm. Did we, I can't remember this off the top of my head, but where people are selecting other not listed, are we giving them the opportunity to write who they are using? So did we give them an open...
Such an unfair question. I can't remember the answer
I genuinely can't remember, but if we didn't, well, then we need to, because you know, that space, I mean, there's a lot of ticketing platforms already, but there are new ones popping up all over. And there are ones that are specifically focused on accessibility, for an example. There are ones that are, you know, relatively similar in terms of what they're doing to everyone else, just packaged up in a different way. So it would just be interesting to see some of the names that people were putting forward and where people are swinging to. You know, I've heard... We know that there's Tessitura, for example, and Spectrix that are used quite predominantly in the theatre world. Now, people have always talked really positively about those two platforms, and it would be interesting to see if they are looking to make that transition over into the attractions world, and maybe some of these people are starting to kind of move over to those. Who knows?
There's a few systems lots of people know about because they kind of... they're not just pure ticketing, are they? They're ticketing. They manage the ticket inventory. They do online sales. They do walk-ups. They do EPOS. They manage your shop. They manage your catering. You know, they do everything to operate the entire attraction. Yeah. And then there are other systems that focus purely on e-commerce and the sale of the tickets themselves online. There are other people that focus purely on the EPOS offering. And actually, there's a lot of complexity within these systems that go to running the attraction itself. And maybe again, we need to give people more choice about what they choose and give them the opportunity to choose multiple things. Because, you know, we might say, do you use Gamma or do you use Merak or do you use DigiTickets? And there may well be people that use DigiTickets for their e-commerce sales and they might use Merak for their membership, or they're running the EPOS in the shops and their food and beverage. I don't think we give people the opportunity to have the nuance of selecting multiple things that they use.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I literally just had a conversation with someone who uses DigiTickets for their ticketing, but, you know, Merak for their or K3 for their tills. So I totally see where we need to do that. Okay, good. Two more questions. Is there future scope to develop comparisons against other science centres?
Yes. Yes is the short answer. And yes, we have done that. It's quite interesting because you and I both have been talking about this year's survey at different places. And the science centres one is a good example. It's good because I was the one talking. I went to the Association of Science and Discovery Centres conference in Belfast. I talked about that on one of the pods just recently, and I had a table talk where I was talking about essentially observations that I found about the data about science centres. But you've done talks in numerous different locations.
I've been all over the place. I was all over the place last year. It was here, there, and everywhere.
Slicing and dicing the data to talk to the group of people that you were talking to. So you were in Ireland and you talked about comparisons of the attractions that we've got in both the Republic and Northern Ireland. And then you talked to Alva you know, that's a different slice of larger attractions. Yeah. And in both cases, we were slicing and dicing the data and trying to find what made that group of people special, or what were the observations that we had, weren't
that,
we?
That was one of the nice things about the report this year, because the data set was so much larger, we could make the things that we're talking about so much more specific for people. So the Alpha talk was really great, actually. So I was very kindly invited along to speak at one of the Alpha Council meetings, and it was at Bletchley Park in their new auditorium. That we were the first group to speak in there. It was wonderful, such a good experience. But that was lovely because I was able to talk about how Alpha members are performing, you know, and give them a specific breakdown of the things that they're doing well, some of the things that they're potentially not doing so well, and give them some real insight into how they can, you know, improve on the things that they're not doing so well. So that was lovely. And then the same at Avia, it was great to be able to give, again, a breakdown of how Irish attractions are performing in terms of the rest of the country, but also showcase attractions that are doing really brilliantly from those areas. So, you know, actually in our, you know, in the talks, I could highlight a specific Irish attraction that was doing an absolutely phenomenal job in terms of, you know, great website, great conversion rate, you know, all of those things. And it was really nice to be able to shine a spotlight on people this year as well. So
do I pick out some examples of that? Yeah. So let's just pick out some of the examples from the Science Centre. So the ASDC members, it was interesting because ASDC members tended to have higher footfall than when you compared it to the whole group of respondents that we had. That surprised me. ASDC members tended to have higher entry fees than all respondents. ASDC members tended to have substantially higher mobile usage than all respondents. So you're up into 90% of traffic for ASDC members, or ASDC members tended to have upwards of 89%, 90% mobile traffic, whereas when you look at the whole group of everybody, it was down into 60%. So still the majority, but not as big a majority.
That's interesting.
So again, is this chance, or is there something interesting about the audience that buy tickets to go to a science centre? Are they genuinely different than people that go to the ALSAT?
Well, yeah, is this stereotypically because someone is really interested in science and technology, therefore they are more digitally advanced potentially as an audience, and that's why that's higher. Interesting.
ASDC members tend to spend less of their gross profit on marketing. 18% of ASDC members spent more than 5% of their turnover on marketing, whereas when you look at the whole group, 24% of all respondents spent more than 5%. So it's interesting, isn't it? This difference in the outcomes and the difference to the inputs. ASDC members were much more likely to track their conversion rate, but most of them didn't track their cart abandonment rate, so they don't know how many people were giving up partway through. The ASDC members were more likely to have a top-level conversion rate. And of the ones that did tell us what their cart abandonment rate, it was more likely to be lower than the average. They updated their websites more frequently, and they tend to spend more on their websites each year than the average. So there was markedly different things that happened across the different groups.
Yeah,
when you looked at Alva, much larger organisation, so the footfall is higher because that's a minimum entry criteria. They spend more on marketing and they have better outcomes. They had better conversion rates than average.
Unsurprising,
completely. But what was interesting was within that group, the averages marked quite relative poor performance. So there were some examples where there were attractions spending a large amount on their site, but achieving poorer conversion rates than the average.
Hopefully none of them are clients. Fingers crossed.
So yeah, there's group averages, and you can see differences by the different groups. I think in future, wouldn't it be interesting if potentially we did this sort of analysis based on the type of organization? You know, if you're a museum, are you more likely to have a higher conversion rate than you are if you're all
Well,
respondents?
this is the thing. So,
What's of interest to
yeah,
people?
what that exactly? It's like we can say, oh, this is interesting. This wouldn't this be useful to know? But actually, is it useful to know for you? One of the things that we did talk about doing was doing a regional breakdown of how attractions were performing, and I think that that's probably on the cards for the next month or so to get that out. We raised that and got some quite good feedback on having that, so that's definitely top of the list. But it, yeah, again, like, are these things going to be useful for you? You know, we don't, we've always had the ethos that any kind of information or support, you know, documentation or, you know, essentially our marketing has to be useful for you, right? Like, what's the point otherwise? We need to know what you need. So more questions, please. More, do you have this? Can we have this? If
Yeah,
you can't, if we
absolutely.
can't do it, we'll tell you. But if we can do it, we'll damn well work hard to get you it.
You can just imagine that some people find the full written report to be really useful. It gives a fixed set of slices and dices, and it gives interesting insights, and it gives recommendation. But people might be interested more in more group comparisons or geographical comparisons with less, you know, less of a large report and more of a, well, I want to see a white paper about my sector or my location or what is special about me compared to everybody else, as opposed to telling me everything that is good in the sector. Where do we focus our attention to have the best value for people at the end of this?
Good. Last question. Is there a correlation between conversion rate and visitor numbers?
It's really interesting because this got me playing with the data. I'm all over a pivot table in Excel. All right. So I did loads of analysis.
I am not.
No. We've got our strengths and weaknesses and complement each other very well, I think. When I did this first time round, and I was working with a team of people that were analysing data, but I was slicing and dicing in different ways. And I looked at these things and I thought there was no great relationship. But when this question came in, I had another stab at reorganizing the data. And actually, I did a heat map version of what is your average sales conversion rate? And we've got like 0 to 1, 1 to 2, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, and more than 5. And then what is your annual visitor numbers in groups? And actually, the larger the annual footfall on site, the more likely you were to have a high conversion rate.
Just for our listeners, this data is quite difficult to visualize. We've got a graph. We've got some pre-pictures that will explain this better, which we will put out on social media if you follow our Twitter account and or if you're connected with us on LinkedIn or follow our LinkedIn Rubber Cheese or Skip the Queue LinkedIn pages. We'll put all of that on there. What we'll also do as well is when we edit this podcast, we always do a video. The videos don't get a lot of love, but there's loads of videos up on our YouTube. So head over to the Rubber Cheese YouTube channel. And within this episode, we will insert what we're talking about as well. So it's just a bit easier to digest.
So yeah, there is definitely a relationship between these two factors. The more footfall there is, the more likely you are to have a high conversion rate. Just intuitively, they must be related variables. This is not just a relationship between the two. You know, there is somehow one is feeding into the other. You know, the more footfall you have, the more budget you're going to have, the more you'll be able to invest in marketing. The more you invest in marketing, you'll have more people focusing on different elements of your marketing, and you'll have more budget to spend on digital people that can focus on conversion rates and marginal gains. I don't know whether that's true. The data doesn't prove that. That's just my instinct that spending money on people like me is probably a worthwhile investment. But that's just instinct. There's no proof to that. The heat map shows there's a relationship, but there's loads of factors involved in what goes on. As I said to you before, spending more money does not guarantee you great outputs. And you have to measure these things, make regular changes. Because just because you've got a large number of people coming through the door does not guarantee you a high conversion rate. and you need to graft to get to the point where your website is converting as best it possibly can. One major redesign does not an increased conversion rate make. Yeah, you need to do lots of little things regularly to nudge it in the right direction.
Yeah, it's just the start. That comes back to what I said at the beginning about, you know, I was just about to say we're at the end of the project. I'm like, no, we're not. We're at the start of the project because the project's launching. That's the starting point for the rest of the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, this has been really good. Well, look, listeners, hopefully you found that useful. Hopefully some of the listeners that are listening, we've answered your questions as well. We'll send this out to all the people that did ask the questions specifically as well. But yeah, coming back to what we've said, is there something that is a burning question from you from the data that we've already released? Is there something that would be so incredibly useful for you that we haven't released that we might potentially have? We just don't know, or we don't know that you need it. And what does this year's survey hold, and what would be useful for the survey and the report to hold for you this year? So we are at the point now where we're gearing up for the 2024 survey. Last year, we launched it in May at the fabulous Museum and Heritage Show. Plans are afoot at the moment for when we launch it, but nothing is diarised yet. So it's a really good opportunity to get involved and have your say about what you'd love to see in it this year.
Yeah, there's a few things. There's some key themes that have come out of our kind of retrospective. You know, we've been belly button gazing and questioning what do we do next year, and there's obvious things that come out of it. One of our big things was we want to simplify 2024. Yeah. We asked too complex questions last year, and it took too long for people to submit their responses, and that's not fair.
It's a big ask that we're asking of you to trust us with your data as it is. We don't want you sitting around for like half an hour having to fill it all out.
So we want to simplify. We want less questions. And we're going to look at potentially a different questionnaire platform. We've done different platforms each year in the last 2 years, and I don't think we've found the right answer yet. So that might be an area that we try and simplify things. My instinct of, and this is just based on my own struggles with life, okay? I am struggling with Google Analytics 4 all of my data has moved, and I don't know how to answer my questions. And that data that's in GA4 is the core of the questions that we ask in the questionnaire. And I'm thinking, if I do this every day, what must it be like for all of you guys listening? Yeah. So what can we do to help you understand how to gather the data and how to submit it? Because there's obviously going to be a disparity, isn't there, between people that do this every day and people that do this as part of a bigger job and they don't do it all the time and they need advice and guidance.
Yeah, so one of the ideas that's been floating around is that we actually put on a little workshop or, you know, little webinars where it shows you how to go and get the data that actually is needed to fill in the survey. And then that's with you. It's a reference point. You can keep hold of that for the, you know, the following years and the subsequent years. And we might look at, you know, we've got a brilliant circle of fabulous suppliers that we work with that are all attractions focused. And so we could potentially partner up with them and run the workshops and do something like that.
And, you know, the questions that we're asking, the data that we're gathering is likely to be marketers' dream dashboard anyway. So it's not just of use to the survey itself, it's of use to your day-to-day, month-to-month reporting and demonstrating the efficacy of what you're doing. So we want to increase the number of people that are responding from large multi-site organizations. So call to action here for digital marketers in large multi-sites. We're interested in talking to you about, you know, if you've got 50 odd sites that you manage ticketing for multiple attractions all over the country, filling in the questionnaire based form approach that we've given may not be the right way for you to share data with us.
No.
So we're really flexible. We want data. We want to ingest more data because it improves the quality of the responses. So we'll be completely flexible around what different large multi-site organizations can provide and the method with which it makes most sense for them to provide it.
So what are we doing? We're doing a vocal shout out here to National Trust, English Heritage, etc., to say, if you want to be part of the survey and the subsequent report and the process that we're offering you, it doesn't work. Like you're not going to sit there 50 times, however many sites you've got, and fill in this data. That's ridiculous. We can give you a better process of doing that, and we can work with you one on one to work out how that works best for you as well. So
completely,
if you do want to be involved, don't let the process of how we collect the data put you off. We can solve that challenge for you.
Shout out, call to action really for everybody that submitted last year and it would be thinking about this year's survey is tell us what key themes are of interest to you. We have what we think is interesting and we'll follow our noses and ask questions and root around the data to try and find the answers. But we don't know what you want as well as you know what you want. So tell us. Yeah, as you've said, Kelly, ask questions about what you'd like to see, but tell us what you'd like us to do. We might, you know, we might be able to do something really, really easily based on the data that we've already got. We might need to ask another question. That there was a question that somebody asked that we weren't able to answer. They wanted to know whether you were primarily educationally focused as an institution or primarily focused on selling tickets, whether that had an impact on your conversion rate. And actually, without us guessing, it's impossible for us to answer that question. And what's the point in us guessing? Because we're going to give you meaningless data. Mm-hmm. If we ask the right questions, what's the primary focus of your website? What are the secondary focuses of your website? If we do that, then we might be able to slice and dice the data. So ask us the questions now, because we can use that to influence what questions we include in the survey.
I would add to also as well, if you are, to say thank you, we had a phenomenal amount of support with the survey last year and the report. So, but for us being able to move from 70 respondents in year one to 100 and, you know, nearly 200 in year two, the difference in that was all of the membership organisations that supported us.
Completely.
You know, we're like, this isn't it's a mammoth task. There's no way I could have done that on my own, you know, just by sending it lots of people and hitting people up on LinkedIn and posting across social media. You know, the biggest difference there is you know, the support we've had. I mean, Alva, Asva have been huge supporters of us from the start, which we're super, super grateful for. This year we had Avia come on board and help us. We've had AIM help us. We had ACE help us. We had
ASDC.
Yes, ASDC. I mean, there are just so many. I've got a huge, huge list of all of the attractions and all of the kind of Hampshire's best attractions and, you know, those smaller regional attraction organisations that have supported Devon's top attractions. You know, without their support, we could not have done that, made that happen. So what I'm asking for is continued support, please, would be great. And are there any other organisations out there that we should be talking to? And if there's any listening that haven't been involved in helping us distribute the survey this year, if you're up for it, give us a shout. I mean, the benefit to your members is phenomenal, right? What we produce for them, and it's all free. It's all for free. Come and get it.
That is a nice segue, because yes, it's all for free, but it doesn't cost nothing.
No.
And actually, what we would also like help with is sponsorship for 2024. So if there are organizations around the listening public, as it were, that would be interested in supporting the work that we do on this and would like to influence and help guide what we do, then we would be really keen on talking to people that would like to sponsor. And that sponsorship could be gift in kind. So some people might be able to help us by doing things with us. Some people might be able to help us by financially supporting the data analysis or the production of reports or production of specific analysis of a slice of the sector that is of interest to them. There's lots of ways in which people could support the work that we do. And obviously, the more support that we get, the bigger we can make this thing, because it is, I mean, it's a Herculean task that you dreamt up 2.5, 3 years ago, isn't it? And you did the first one, and it was amazing. And you got a decent number of respondents, and I think we were both amazed at the number of people that gave us data and downloaded the report and interacted with us. And then we were blown away in 23. But we just need to do more. There's clearly a market for this. There's a value in what we're doing. It's not just chance. It wasn't a crackpot idea you had 3 years ago
not,
to do this.
It was not a crackpot idea about it at all. No, it wasn't a crackpot idea. It was really nice, actually. You've just given me a really good flashback. Actually, the Museum and Heritage Show has played like a part in this for years, actually, because the survey itself launched last year at the M&H, but the previous year, I sat down at the M&H and had a chat with Bernard Donoghue about, I've got this idea, Bernard, and I think this is good. I think this would deliver some real good value to the sector. You know, would Alpha be happy to help, you know, get the word out and stuff? And that was where it started. So isn't that funny? That's a connection. I'd forgotten all about that. It's not crackpot. It is amazing. And I'm so happy that we've been able to produce this. The value that it delivers to the sector, it, I get people tell me about the value. So this is not me going, it's definitely delivering value. You know, the feedback that we've had has been so incredibly positive on it. And it's just been wonderful to be part of that. So let's make next year's bigger and even better, but maybe some less questions so it doesn't take you as long.
Yes. More rows in my spreadsheet, less columns in my spreadsheet.
Yes, less time taken up. If you can do it over a cup of tea and a biscuit, then that's perfect, right?
I reckon so.
Hopefully that's delivered you some good value today, and we'll see you next time.
Cheers. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Skip the Queue. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. It really helps others find us. And remember to follow us on Twitter for your chance to win the books that have been mentioned. Skip the Queue is brought to you by Rubber Cheese, a digital agency that builds remarkable systems and websites for attractions that helps them increase their visitor numbers. You can find show notes and transcriptions from this episode and more over on our website, rubbercheese.com/podcast.